previously.
You can kind of start seeing it as the holidays start to approach in the patients, and I feel like they feel more stressed. They feel outside pressure. People are asking them when they're going to start their families or what's going on, or if they have a baby, when they're going to have their second child. And so it really puts an added stress to the already stressful season that is around, that the holidays bring.
This is Beyond the Birds and Bees on Austin's Talk 1370.
Well, hi, Austin. It is today is Saturday, December the 4th. It's Dr. Kaylin Silverberg from the Texas Fertility Center, and I'm joined today by Dr. Rob Cowan, who's a good friend of our practice. Rob's with Austin Area OB-GYN. We're going to introduce him in just a minute and have him talk to you a little bit as well. Today, like I said, is the 4th of December. Lots going on today in Austin. It's a gorgeous day outside. It's so pretty. It's supposed to get colder this afternoon from what I understand, but it's a beautiful day now. I'm sure people are out shopping and kind of checking out the malls, and hopefully they've got us piped in now through the mall so everybody can hear the show and keep up with what's going on in the world of fertility today. But tonight, I know Nebraska's playing Oklahoma, so they're playing in the game that Texas should be playing in tonight. But I suspect that many of you will be watching that game tonight. But again, we're from the Texas Fertility Center. Our website, www.txfertility.com. We do take calls. In fact, we'd love for you to call in today if you have any questions either for me or for Dr. Cowan. Our call-in number is 599-1370, 599-1370. Also, I want to make our listeners aware of the fact that our podcasts from the show are now available on our website, again, www.txfertility.com. We'll talk about upcoming events a little bit later on in the show. But today, we're so lucky to be joined by Rob Cowan. Rob's a good buddy of mine. He's a good buddy of our practices. And Rob is with the Austin area OBGYN group. So, Rob, welcome.
Hey, thank you.
We're so happy that you're here. I'm so happy that you, I know you're crazy busy, especially around the holidays, but I'm so glad you could take time out to join us.
Oh, thank you very much.
Well, it's a pleasure. Listen, so why don't you tell our listeners, first of all, a little bit about your training. Where'd you grow up and where'd you go to med school?
I grew up in the metropolis of Hillsboro, Texas. It's about 2 hours north of Austin. And small town boy. Got to the University of Texas as fast as I could, though, and got a biology degree from UT, then went to medical school in Galveston. So I'm a UT through and through.
That's great.
That said, my oldest son is a freshman at A&M. So.
Well, so you got it all covered. And this happens to be the radio station of the Fighting Aggies. So I know that, Snoop's up here with his whoops. So anyway, so I know that, you got everybody covered, which is really pretty smart on your behalf. How long have you been in Austin? How long have you been practicing?
I've been in Austin just over 15 years. Yeah.
That's great. So. And you practice, where's your practice? Tell everybody about your practice.
Well, we're a group practice. We're at what's technically called the Women's Center of Texas. It's at North Austin Medical Center, Palmer and Mopac. And what we've built there is a women's hospital, so exclusively for women. And we can offer total care. Our office is in the hospital itself. We occupy the second floor of the hospital, and labor and delivery is on the third floor, so we can have our whole gamut of practice there. We can deliver our babies. We can perform surgery. We can see our patients on an outpatient basis.
And it's just a gorgeous place. I mean, it's really an incredible facility. But you also have ancillary facilities there as well. They do mammography. They do what else?
We have sonography, mammography, bone density. We have our own lab. It's kind of one-stop shopping, and that's kind of the way we've designed it so that women don't have to go all over Austin to get their testing done.
Yeah, so it's really just comprehensive services in one location, which is really fantastic. Well, I think that there's so many things that we can talk about. One thing that you and I talked about a little bit before the show to discuss is the whole issue and the whole area of preconceptual counseling. So in other words, when a woman decides that she wants to have a baby, you know, most people think, hey, this is easy. I'm going to stop taking my pills and, we'll start having sex every other day mid-cycle. And, lo and behold, it'll happen in a month. And, that's all there is to it. There's nothing to it. No thought needs to go into it. It's just real simple and it's real straightforward. But in fact, that's really not always the case, which is why the whole show is here and why the infertility practice is here. But there are recommendations now from the American College of OB-GYN, and there are also recommendations from the geneticists that women should have some preconceptual counseling, maybe even some preconceptual genetic testing.
Right.
How do you guys approach that in your practice?
Well, this is kind of a new phenomenon that we've seen where I think in the old days that women would just try to get pregnant and let the chips fall where they may. But now people, I think, tend to be a little better about planning their reproductive lives and childbirth. And they come in, many come in for preconception visits where they come in and they say, okay, my husband and I are going to start trying to conceive in 2 months. What do I need to know? And so we take a good medical history and we look at a variety of things. We look at any underlying medical conditions they may have. We look at any medications that they're on. There are certain medications that we don't want them to be taking while they're trying to be pregnant. And in fact, we tell our patients to treat themselves as if they were pregnant when they're trying, because you never know.
Sure.
And I even go as far as to look into the patient's occupation. There are certain exposure risks, primarily healthcare workers, I think, and school teachers. And we'll do some special testing for those women. We want to make sure that they're on prenatal vitamins. We know that folic acid is very important in preventing spina bifida. We like them on omega-3 fatty acids. And the whole visit probably takes about 30 to 40 minutes.
That's great. So you really just comprehensively approach all the basics. What about, you know, what do you tell women when they're on birth control pills? Because, you know, there's this lot of information on the internet that says, oh, you need to be off birth control pills for 3 months or for 6 months, or, you know, I don't know where all this stuff got started, but a lot of patients will say, well, you know, I need to be off pills for a certain time and I shouldn't get pregnant. I should use condoms for a while. What do you tell them about
that? Well, that's a misconception, you know, that you have to be off the pill for 3 to 6 months or whatever the number is before they conceive. And I tell my patients to look at it this way. Rarely, but sometimes we'll see patients who get pregnant on the pill, and their babies are not at any undue risk.
Sure.
Even though they may continue taking the pill not knowing they're pregnant. So we tell the patients to finish out their pack of pills, and then they're good to go.
Yeah, and they can start immediately in the following cycle.
Right.
That's great. So what about just other basic things? Alcohol? I mean, do you talk to them about alcohol, cigarettes, caffeine?
We do. There's a lot of variation in the way practitioners practice. And obviously alcohol and smoking are out. But, I do allow caffeine in moderation. I know some practitioners do not. We do encourage exercise. There are some good studies that show that women who exercise during pregnancy have easier labors and deliveries. So we encourage that.
Sure.
There are certain activities I do not like my patients to participate in. I don't like them horseback riding. I don't like them snow skiing, perhaps.
Anything where they can fall?
Yeah, anything where they can fall. And
so mountain biking's kind of out.
Mountain biking and
skydiving.
Even road biking kind of spooks me a little bit, too. So anything where they could fall, or there's a jolting motion, I think.
Sure. Sure. So you tell them, is all alcohol out? I mean, what's the latest on this? Because I don't even know. I mean, I've always thought, you know, a margarita here, a glass of wine there. I mean, you know, show me the data that's really a problem in pregnancy.
Well, you know, the data really, if you're talking about something where you're going to have some adverse effect for the pregnancy, it's got to be a lot of alcohol. It's got to be kind of that binge drinking that you read about. And it's got to be frequent, too. But, when fetal organ development is taking place, I think that's really the time that you do want to avoid any bad behavior. I think that probably the first and second trimesters, you should not probably an occasional glass of wine here and there is not harmful, but probably abstain otherwise. The third trimester, I do allow my patients to have an occasional glass of wine, and never been a problem for me.
Sure. Yeah. And I would totally agree with that. I just think that that's reasonable. But so caffeine, you know, we have patients who are so concerned about anything. I mean, you know, our patients want every I dotted, every T crossed. And so they'll come in and they'll say, well, you know, what about chocolate? And then, you know, cause chocolate's got caffeine in it, and is dark chocolate better, or is milk chocolate better? I mean, do you tell patients to worry about chocolate?
I don't. I mean, there's a kind of a similar chemical to caffeine that's in chocolate. It's methyl xanthine is the name of it, and it's I don't think it's in any amount that would be harmful. The old studies on caffeine, I think you had to drink in excess of 5 cups of coffee a day to put yourself at risk for a miscarriage. But, I think a cup of coffee a day is fine.
Yeah, we do the same thing. I mean, we really have ratcheted it down. I think the some of the newer studies talk more like 2 cups of coffee a day. And I'll tell my patients, and I'm not a coffee drinker. I mean, I should probably admit that up front. So I'm really talking totally out of school here. But, my understanding is that not all coffee is created equal. I mean, some of these coffees are, especially some of these Brazilian dark beans and these, they're really pretty intensely loaded with caffeine. But we tell our patients, you want a cup of coffee here, a cup of coffee there. That's probably not an unreasonable thing to do. And chocolate, I tell my patients, for God's sake, you want chocolate, have chocolate.
Right. And Diet Coke, too. I think the caffeine content in Diet Coke is less than coffee. And
I know we can't take away everything. We're going to take away alcohol. Cigarettes, they've got to stop. There's no question about that. But, a little alcohol, a little caffeine, a little chocolate.
And we see it both ways. We fight our battles, and I have that subset of women who just absolutely just remove everything that might possibly cause any damage to their pregnancy, and then I've got some that are laid back, and I respect both schools of thought.
Yeah, well, we're coming up against a break here, so I'll tell you what I want to do. We will let's let people go. We'll go to a commercial, and then when we come back, I do want to talk to you a little bit about preconceptual testing. Testing for cystic fibrosis, testing for other types of genetic diseases to get your feel for that. And also, just in general, what you tell patients, how should they get themselves ready to approach a pregnancy? So again, Kaylin Silverberg, Rob Cowan, Texas Fertility Center, Beyond the Birds and Bees. We're so happy to have you joining us today on Saturday, the 4th of December, and we'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody, to Beyond the Birds and Bees. It's Dr. Kaylin Silverberg from the Texas Fertility Center, and I'm joined today by Dr. Rob Cowan with Austin Area OB-GYN. And we're going to get into a little bit more about preconceptual counseling here in just a minute, but I just want to remind everybody who is out there who's thinking about something that they might want to do in a little while. Lake Travis is playing Cedar Park today at Darrell Carroll Royal Stadium, and that game starts in a little less than an hour now. They got a gorgeous day to play. We got 76 degrees in Austin today, although it's going to get cold, apparently. We're supposed to be in the 40s tonight, which is that's going to be a shame. I hope that that's just short-lived and it warms back up. But anyway, we're again with Texas Fertility Center and our website, www.txfertility.com. We'd also like to take any calls. If you have any questions, feel free to call in at 599-1370, 599-1370. So, Rob, before the break, we were talking a little bit about how women get ready for pregnancy. And what do you do as a practitioner, as an OB-GYN, what do you do when a woman comes to you and says, Dr. Cowan, we're thinking about getting pregnant in the next couple of months? What do you advise them to do from there?
Well, we kind of got into that a little bit as far as, prenatal vitamins and kind of reviewing their medical history and their medications. But, another thing that comes to mind that we do is genetic testing for many of our patients. And there are some guidelines that we follow in regard to a patient's background. For example, if we have a Caucasian patient, we always want to screen them for cystic fibrosis, and that's a genetic test. If they're black, we want to screen them for sickle cell. If they're of Mediterranean origin, we want to screen them for thalassemia. And then if they're of Jewish origin, then we want to there's a variety of actually diseases, Tay-Sachs probably being the most prominent.
Sure. And how do you screen them for those things?
It's just a blood test. Just a blood test. And it's a special test, but that they have to send out of Austin, but it's not hard to do.
Yeah. Most of the patients who we see in our practice have been screened for the basic things. I mean, the things that you're basically talking about. The advances in science have just been phenomenal. I mean, it just kind of makes your head spin. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, if we were going to screen patients for just a few basic things, it was up to $1,000, and it was blood testing. I mean, tube after tube of blood. Now there's this company out of California. They started actually at Stanford. It's called Counsyl. And you can go to their website if anybody's interested. It's counsyl.com. We'll put them up on our website, too, at TX Fertility. But they have a saliva test. And so couples can come in, and for $349, you essentially spit into a test tube and mail it off to California. And I'm sure the postmen really like carrying those packages, but they deliver them out to this place near Stanford, and they will screen for 109 different genetic disorders that are autosomal recessive disorders, as you know. So they will screen for cystic fibrosis. They will screen for Tay-Sachs. They'll screen for all kinds of other diseases, most of which are so obscure that people have never heard of them. And the question that our patients ask us all the time is, well, gosh, should we be screened? Should we not be screened? It sounds so important. I mean, 109 different diseases. I mean, you know, if we can do anything that we can to reduce the risk of having a baby with a problem, we're on board. But right. Is it, I mean, in your opinion, is it worthwhile doing all these things? Is it not?
I think so. You know, it's, we see it both ways. Some of our patients really don't want that information, and they don't need that information. But, you know, it's my job to at least give them the information they need to make a decision on that.
Sure.
And so that's the way we've approached it in our office, and it seems to work well. You know, we'll go through about a 30-minute counseling session with our patients.
Yeah, we do pretty much the same thing, and we'll talk to them about it. I mean, it's, you know, now it's so much less invasive and so much less intrusive, and really, to be honest, so much less expensive.
I know, and I think this idea where you take one drop of blood or saliva or whatever it is, and we're able to test for all these different conditions, that is going to be the wave of the future. Yeah. I think that there's a local company who's doing that, and it's just, it's phenomenal what they can do now.
Yeah, and the testing is such a huge business. I mean, there are all kinds of companies getting into it. There's another company that we've been contacted by, a company called Good Start Genetics, and they have got guys from MIT and from Harvard. They're based in Boston, obviously. They have a blood test, but it uses a different kind of microarray technology, and it's just phenomenal. The number of tests they can screen for, the accuracy, and it really puts people's mind at ease because they know they either have an issue, and in which case we can screen their partner. Because most of these things are autosomal recessive. And
right.
For our listeners, an autosomal recessive disorder, both members of the couple have to at least be carriers.
Right, right.
So in other words, if you have two abnormal genes, then you actually have the disease. It's like with sickle cell. So if you've got two abnormal genes for sickle cell, you have the disease. You have sickle cell anemia, and it's potentially a life-threatening disease, and you need to make sure you see somebody about it so that you can take precautions so that you don't get into a sickle cell crisis. If you have one of the genes that are abnormal and one normal, you're a carrier, so you have what's called sickle cell trait. And then if you have neither of the genes, you don't have to worry about it ever. You can never acquire it. It's not something you can catch from anybody else. It's
right.
Just, it's over.
Exactly. And I think that some of these tests, you know, the big question in the future, for the future, is going to be, what do we do with this information?
Sure.
You know, for example, if you're testing, you know, a patient and you find out they've got some potentially life-threatening condition, not now, but maybe 20 years from now, what do you do with that information?
Yeah.
And that's probably for the ethicist to hash out.
Absolutely. It's a tough one. And we're faced with this every day because we can offer a service called pre-implantation genetic screening. And so if we have, for example, a male who's a carrier for cystic fibrosis and a female who's a carrier for cystic fibrosis, and by the way, there are at least 92 different genetic alterations that can cause it. So just because you're a CF carrier doesn't mean that you're destined to have a baby with CF if your wife's a carrier. If
right.
She's got a different mutation, you may be fine.
Exactly.
But meanwhile, if we've got a couple, for example, let's talk about an African-American couple because it's so much easier. They both have sickle cell trait,
mm-hmm.
and they want to make sure they don't have a baby with sickle cell disease. I mean, they know sickle cell trait's okay because they've got it, they've lived with it, they're doing fine, but they don't want a baby with sickle cell disease. So what we can do, based on this information that we've obtained before they try and conceive, we can do in vitro fertilization. We get the eggs out of the woman. We fertilize them with her husband's sperm. We make embryos. Then on the third day of embryonic development, our embryologists will drill a hole in the membrane around the embryo, and they'll very carefully remove a single cell. They'll put that cell on a microscopic slide. They treat it so the cell opens up and the DNA gets released. They fix the DNA to the slide. And then we ship it off where it gets stained and evaluated. And we can know with 99.8% certainty whether or not a specific embryo has sickle cell disease or sickle cell trait or is totally disease and carrier-free. And then we can choose which embryos we're going to transfer. It's just incredible.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's an incredible technology. So, well, I'll tell you what, let's move on from preconceptual counseling and let's talk about infertility, which is kind of the scope of our practice and the scope of what we do, and the scope of what we talk about on Beyond the Birds and Bees. What's your basic approach to infertility?
Well, let's kind of talk about when we see these people for evaluation, because that's a question I always get. And the older recommendations always said, after 12 months of trying, then you're considered to have an infertility issue or a fertility issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's historically what we've told people. But in reality, we've shortened that to about 6 months. And The reason is because our testing is better, our treatments are better. We feel like 6 months is a reasonable amount of time to try before evaluation. And so we have shortened that 12 months to 6 months, and that's what we're telling our patients now.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable. We're kind of still at that hybrid stage where we tell patients if they're under 35 and they want to try for a year, it's probably not an unreasonable thing unless they know, and I'll come back to this question for you in just a second, unless they know there's a problem. But if they're 35 or over, we totally agree 6 months is really it, because if they're not pregnant within 6 months, half people who try for 6 months will be pregnant by that point in time. And if they're not pregnant, there's typically something wrong. Now, what about if a woman or a guy suspects or knows that there's a problem? A woman had gonorrhea when she was in college, or she had chlamydia, or she has totally random cycles.
Right. Well, you know, and we do. We have a kind of a questionnaire that we use with our patients that help guide our therapy. So, and our testing. So, for example, if somebody has had an infection in their pelvic organs, we know that we want to evaluate that on the front end and not the back end. We don't want to let things languish for months and months and months without testing. If the husband has a history of chemotherapy, for example, that'd be a good example.
Absolutely.
We want to get him tested early. You know, the statistics that I typically quote, and you know, you're the statistics guy, is about 40% of fertility issues or male factor, about 40% are ovulatory, and then that tends to be where we focus our initial evaluation. We get a semen analysis from the guy. We assess ovulation in the woman. And
right.
Kind of go from there.
Yeah, and that's the same numbers we use: 40% male, 40% female, 20% combination.
Yeah.
And it's just so common. And you know, it's funny because guys will come into our office. I don't know if it's the same thing for you, but guys will come into our office and they'll say, "Well, now, wait a minute, my wife doesn't have regular cycles. Just get her checked out first. And, you know, then once you get that all fixed, give us some time to try and then come back to me if you really need a sperm test."
Exactly. Exactly. We go through the same thing. It's like pulling teeth sometimes.
Yeah, it's the game. And it's like, come on, you know. And so I tell my patients the same thing. Infertility is a team sport.
Right.
You know, it's all of us against the disease, and we need everybody to be playing, you know, to their full potential to be able to win the game. So we, you know, we'll talk to the guys and we'll say, look, you know, we're absolutely going to evaluate your spouse. We're absolutely going to make sure that she's ovulating, make sure her tubes are good, make sure her uterine cavity is normal. But we've got to get a sperm test because so common to have a problem.
Well, what you don't want to do is have the woman evaluated, and you can spend some money doing this. And then all of a sudden you find out, oh, well, here's the problem over here. The guy's got a low count.
It was a waste.
Yeah.
Right. And plus it avoids the whole blame game thing. I mean, I think that if we approach it as everybody's got to do their part. You know, the woman's got to do her part. The guy's got to do his part. We, as physicians, have to do our part. Everybody's doing their part. And if somebody's not carrying their weight and, you know, we're not going to evaluate the guy, for example, that's just a recipe for disaster. And, you know, essentially what we're saying to the woman is, you know, it's probably your problem. And once we make sure that it's not your problem, then we'll go look at other factors. And that's silly.
Right. Well, you know, there's a lot of emotions at play here, too. So we're sensitive to that. We know that this is a very stressful time, that there, you know, there's some financial considerations, money is being spent. And we understand that, too. And that can create a lot of friction, too, in relationships. And so we kind of act as the mediator oftentimes to kind of, you know, approach it as a team sport and kind of get all the players involved.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's just walk real quickly for a minute about the historical information about ovulation. So how do you know, or how should a woman know if she's ovulating or not?
You know, the one thing, and I guess I've learned this with time, just practicing, the first thing that I look at, I think, is I ask them about their menstrual cycles. And mm-hmm. I say, what are your cycles doing? And what I've come to understand is that a woman who is having very cyclic periods every 28 to 32 days is in all probability ovulatory.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just an easy assessment. But women who come in with irregular cycles, or they're missing cycles, then they may have an ovulatory issue.
Do they have any other symptoms? I mean, do you look for anything else when you're talking to a woman about her cycles? I mean, do you ask her anything else about to make sure that she's ovulating?
You know, we have. It's part of our questionnaire. We ask about breast tenderness and maybe PMS-type symptoms, some kind of indication that their hormones are functional. What do you guys do?
Well, we do the same thing. I'll tell you my favorite PMS story. I asked a patient, I don't know, a few years ago. I'll never forget this because it was hysterical. I'll say to her, you know, so do you get any kind of PMS symptoms. And she looks at me like I'm from Saturn. You know, I mean, what are you talking about, PMS symptoms? And I said, you know, do you get moody? Do you get angry? Do you get bitchy? I mean, does anything bad happen? And she says, absolutely not. And she thinks about it for a minute. She says, you know, but I'll tell you something. I've just now thought about this. Every month, just before I really start to bleed, my husband just really, his personality totally changes. He gets to be so irritating and so aggravating to me. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, so how do I respond to this? I mean, do I say, you know, look, here's a mirror, you know? I mean, what do we do? But I'll never forget that because she was so matter of fact. And then she like breaks into this big smile because she knew it. She was just playing me.
Right.
But
right.
It was pretty funny, pretty classic. Well, anyway, we are up against another break, and so we're going to break for a minute. When we come back, we're going to talk more about the diagnosis of infertility, and then we're going to get into some treatment issues. And then I want to talk about also, you know, when should patients come to see an OB-GYN? When should they go directly to the RE? So again, Kaylin Silverberg from the Texas Fertility Center, our website, www.txfertility.com. And we're so fortunate today to be joined by Dr. Rob Cowan from Austin Area OB-GYN. And we will see you on the other side of the break.
1370 AM.
Talk 1370, the right choice for weekends.
Well, welcome back to Beyond the Birds and Bees. Dr. Kaylin Silverberg, and I'm joined today with Dr. Rob Cowan. And Rob is with the Austin Area OB-GYN Group. And just to remind everybody, we are live. It is Saturday, December the 4th at about 12:40 or so in beautiful Austin, Texas. We got a great day today. It's going to be up in the mid-70s. And like I said before, there's a game that's getting ready to start over at Darrell K. Royal Memorial Stadium. Lake Travis is playing Cedar Park. I know it's going to be a big game if anybody's interested in going to catch that game. We had a couple of calls in the break wanting to know our website and a little bit about our website. Our website is www.txfertility.com. It's what's called an authority site. We have over 120 pages of information, lots of audiovisual information. We have we're linked now to Twitter and to Facebook and Dig and Gather and all kinds of other sites like that. But we have podcasts up. So that you can bring up on the podcast and hear what's happened in the last shows that we've done, the last few radio shows that we've done. But we also have a ton of information, videos, lab tours, all kinds of links to other interesting organizations and information, and mainly just a lot of information about every aspect of fertility. So male fertility, female fertility, surgery, medical treatments, diagnosis, everything. And we have a big section on in vitro fertilization and all the other aspects associated with IVF. So I would strongly encourage you to check out our website. Again, it's www.txfertility.com. Just to bring people up to speed on some of the things that are coming up this week and the next couple of weeks with our practice, we have an IVF orientation. The second Wednesday of every month, we put on a free IVF orientation up at North Austin Medical Center. It's in the second floor conference room. It's free. The physicians rotate through there. Dr. Natalie Berger is going to be giving the presentation this week. She's pinch hitting for me, which I really appreciate. And also, in addition to one of the physicians every month, we also have one of our embryologists, and we have one of our nurses, and we also have a financial counselor who's going to be on site every time. So we do ask you to RSVP. You can call the office at 451-0149, or you can link into our website and get information that way, www.txfertility.com. We do like to have people RSVP because we provide dinner. It's not the best dinner you've ever had, but it's, you know, it's pizza and it's sandwiches and it's not bad. And again, it's all free. And so we'd love to have you attend. It's about an hour and a half show with slides between the physicians and the embryologists and the nurses. And when you leave, you really know a whole lot more about in vitro fertilization and what goes on. On the 15th, the following Wednesday, we have our monthly Maybe Baby seminar, and that's up at Round Rock Medical Center. Dr. Rinku Mehta is going to be putting that one on the 15th. We also, on the 15th, the night of the 15th, have our peer support group, and that's led by a couple of the nurses in our office. Jamie Leonard and Kelly Long are going to be putting that on, and that's at the Dell Jewish Community Center for the peer support group. Very effective. It's really growing. We have a lot of people who come to that every month. It's really terrific. So anyway, I'm going to get back to Rob here so that, you know, before he falls asleep on me. But Rob, I want to get back to you and talk to you a little bit about the diagnosis and treatment of infertility. So we were talking before the break about ovulation. And so you talked about the issues, the historical issues for ovulation, how you can tell if a woman's ovulating or not. What about testing? What about basal body temperature chart testing, ovulation kits?
You know, those are kind of, I consider those the old school methods. You know, the basal body temperature, progesterone levels, they really don't tell you that you've ovulated until you've already ovulated.
Sure.
And so I find those of limited use. The with the new ovulation predictor kits, I think really we've used those very effectively in our practice and continue to do so. That the advantage there is you find out that you're about to ovulate. And so it gives you much more practical information.
Sure. So couples can go ahead and plan when to do an insemination, when to have intercourse.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's really great. Weather testing do you think is important?
Well, you know, we do sonograms on everybody. We do usually their first visit we do a sonogram because if they've got some anatomical abnormality of their uterus or maybe they have a fibroid or a cyst on their ovary, we want to know that. And so because it'll steer our therapy into a different direction. So.
Absolutely. And isn't it amazing how often people come in? They have no idea. They think everything's perfectly normal. They're just coming in for a visit because they want to talk to you about, you know, that their decision to go ahead and try for pregnancy. And you do an ultrasound, and all of a sudden, you know, boom, there's an endometrioma in the ovary, or there's another kind of a cyst that you want to watch, or there's a fibroid. And it really does change your management, doesn't it?
Yeah, it really does. You know, you may need to take those patients to surgery to fix whatever problem it is. You know, we find a large portion of our patients have endometriosis and they never knew it. And so there's a lot of useful information that you can get from the sonogram.
Endometriosis is such a funny thing because, you know, people say all the time, oh no, I can't have an endometrioma. I can't have anything wrong with my ovaries because I don't have any symptoms. And, you know, we tell them, look, the most common symptom of endometriosis really is infertility.
Right.
And after that, you get pain with your periods, pain with intercourse, pain in general.
Right.
You know, maybe some problems with bowel movements or urination.
Endometriosis is really a funny disease because it doesn't follow any set pattern. And I know you know this, but it's, you know, some women have pain. Some women don't have pain. Some women have fertility issues. Some women don't. And it's just there's never a predictable pattern that we see. And that's what makes it so frustrating for us as physicians, I think.
Sure. And it makes it frustrating for patients because, you know, everybody wants something to be linear. In other words, they want a relationship. It's like if I've got symptoms, okay, I acknowledge I might have disease. But if my symptoms aren't bad, my disease can't be bad.
Right.
You know, and if my symptoms are horrible, my disease must be horrible. And endometriosis is just the opposite. There is no relationship between the severity of the disease and the severity of the symptoms.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, it's human nature to want to have a cause and effect, and if there's a problem, fix it. But it's just not that easy in medicine.
I know it. It's very frustrating. We talked about the guys, so we're going to get a semen analysis there. And you know, every time we talk about this subject, it's kind of frustrating because I'm sure if I'm a woman or if you're a woman out there listening, you're thinking, now, wait a minute, I've got to go through all this testing, and what does he do? He just has to, you know, give a little specimen in a cup, and he's done?
Right.
You know, it's just that easy? And it's one of those life is not fair kind of things.
It's totally unfair.
Right. But the way we try and explain it to women to make them feel a little bit better is because everything that happens for pregnancy happens inside the woman.
Right. But, you know, I think that the women do gain some comfort from being proactive, from just doing something, from whether we're giving them medicine or we're performing a surgery on them or something like that. They just feel like they're moving in a forward direction, and that's important too.
And so much of infertility treatment, I think, is really loss of control. I think it's related to the emotional aspects or just related to the fact that women look at fertility like a light switch.
Right.
You know, they don't want to get pregnant, so they take birth control pills and they turn the switch off. And they decide it's time to get pregnant. They stop the pills, they turn the switch on, and it should happen right away. And the problem is when it doesn't happen that way, it kind of shakes people's world.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, it's a very frustrating thing. So we've talked about endometriosis. What about fibroids? Do you guys see fibroids very often?
We see fibroids quite a bit. And it's kind of follows the same pattern as endometriosis. The patients may be completely asymptomatic. You know, the most common symptom that we see from fibroids is bleeding, either real, real heavy periods or bleeding between periods. And so we see it just enough that's why we do sonograms on the front end of their evaluation. And the nice thing about fibroids is they're easy to fix.
Sure. Tell our listeners, because some of them may not be familiar with what fibroids even are. We're talking about it like everybody knows about them.
Well, fibroids are benign growths of muscle inside the uterus. And the uterus is comprised of something called smooth muscle. And that's what these fibroids are. They're just bundles of smooth muscle. They're not cancer, typically, but they can cause pain. They can cause bloating. They can grow to enormous size, and they're a notorious cause of fertility problems.
Sure. Miscarriage, infertility in general.
Yeah.
Now, so what about treatment then? Not just of fibroids, but let's go back to ovulation for a minute. What are your first line thoughts about a woman who may not be having regular periods? She may not be ovulating. What are you going to think about doing?
Well, you know, in our office, we'll do everything up to in vitro. So the mainstay of our therapy is going to be simple things like oral medicines to enhance ovulation. And the two medicines that we use a lot are Clomid, which most people are familiar with, and then the new one that we're using is Femara, and it's not FDA approved for fertility use, but we're finding it to be quite effective. And it's really, these are just pills that you take for 5 days early in your cycle, and then we evaluate our patients usually in the middle of their cycle to see if they're producing a follicle. And a follicle is a little cyst on the ovary that contains the egg. And, you know, they don't always respond to the medicine, but in most cases, they'll have a response and we can get them ovulating.
And how can you tell if they're responding? What do you do? So a woman comes in and she's having her period. So kind of walk me through what mm-hmm. that cycle looks like.
Well, typically what we'll do is we'll put them on some kind of oral medicine early in their cycle for 5 days. Then we do a sonogram mid-cycle, and we're looking for a follicle. We can watch that follicle grow. When we consider it to be of mature size, we will either have the patient monitor their ovulation with ovulation predictor kits. I think that's how you guys do it. Some of us will give injections to cause the egg to release the next day. But the advantage you gain is you're able to very precisely pinpoint ovulation. So you know when to tell your patients to have intercourse at home, or you know when to perform an insemination in the office.
And what happens if they don't? If that medicine doesn't work, what do you do? I mean,
well,
or if that dose of medicine, what?
Well, we can increase the dose. There seems to be a threshold effect where if we're giving the patient not enough medicine, we have to increase the dose until we find the right medicine, and that doesn't always happen too. Sometimes our patients will be completely insensitive to the medicine we give them, and that can get frustrating. That's when I call you.
Okay, well, thanks. To save the frustrating people for us, that's really very much appreciated. So talk a little bit about Femara, because, you know, there's a lot of controversy about Femara. We all got this letter from Novartis, who's the manufacturer, that says Femara is not to be used for ovulation induction. And I think the problem is there was this Canadian study that showed a few children who'd been born after their mothers had taken Femara had an increased risk of skeletal abnormalities and cardiac abnormalities.
Right,
but there's a lot of other data that says that that's just not true.
Yeah, yeah. The most of the data says that Femara is just fine. We like it for a couple of reasons. Number one, it doesn't have all the side effects that are associated with Clomid, the hot flashes and the moodiness that can be associated with Clomid. It doesn't thin the lining quite as much as Clomid. And then the twin rate is actually a little bit lower with Femara. It's about 8% with Clomid, and we quote a rate of about 5% with mm-hmm. Femara. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it is definitely off-label use. We recognize that. We tell our patients that. But it's so darn effective that we keep using it.
And the risk appears to be very, very, very low. I mean, Dr. Berger came when she joined our practice. She was really a big Femara user, and I was kind of, you know, afraid of this letter that we'd gotten. And so Natalie has really kind of done a job on me. She really worked on me, and she pulled the data and showed it to me. And, you know, it puts doctors in a quandary because, you know, here you've got, on the one hand, you got a letter from the company saying, don't use it, we make it and don't use it. And on the other hand, you've got scientific literature that says that the one study that caused the problem was probably a flawed study.
Right.
And there's lots of other information out there that the drug is effective.
Well, I look at it this way, Kalen. I mean, you're taking the medicine for 5 days out of the month early in your cycle before you're even pregnant.
Correct.
So it makes,
and it's gone. It's out of your system.
It's out of your system quick. So it makes no sense to me how that medicine could cause problems with the developing fetus.
Sure. I mean, it's a tough one. It's a tough, tough issue. And so I think I agree with you completely. As long as the patients are adequately informed and they understand what the situation is and they want to go ahead and do that, you know, it's terrific. And certainly they complain absolutely of far fewer side effects.
Right, right.
I mean, Clomid is a nasty medicine to give to somebody. I mean, it's a estrogen on the one hand. It's an anti-estrogen on the other hand. So you're really putting them on this roller coaster. It's like, you know, you're hitting them one way and you're hitting them the other way. And you know, they make estrogen, but on the other hand, they have hot flashes indicative of low estrogen.
Right. Right.
So it's a tough one. It's a tough one. So when do you refer patients on? I mean, is there anybody that you think should come directly to a reproductive endocrinologist? I mean, should somebody come directly to Texas Fertility and bypass the OB-GYN?
Yeah, we'll have patients who come in with, for example, if the husband has an extraordinarily low sperm count, you know, we can deal with moderately low sperm counts, but if they're really low, then they need to go see a urologist. Well, the husband needs to go see a urologist, first of all, and then sure. needs to go see you guys as well. We have patients who have been in the fertility cycle for months, maybe even years, and these people are they're looking for a second opinion, and really their money is better spent with you. You know, I'm not going to be able to reinvent the wheel with them, and they've maybe exhausted the whole gamut of what we can do in the generalist's office, and they need in vitro or something more sophisticated than what we can offer.
And we just get back to the whole concept. I mean, what we tell our patients routinely is that fertility treatment, as far as the interactions between the OB-GYNs and the REs, is like a relay race. So, you know, they come to see you, you start running with them, or they give you the baton, you run them around the track as far as you're comfortable taking them around the track. And sometimes that's through diagnosis, and you'll run up against something and you say, whoa, she's got an abnormality with her uterus that's really not repairable, she needs a gestational carrier, and you don't do that, so you send them on. Sometimes, you know, you want to take them all the way through Clomid or Femara or both. But at some point in time, you're going to hit that wall and you're sure. going to say, you know what, this is as far as I'm comfortable taking you. And you're going to hand the baton to us. And then it's our responsibility to take them around the track the rest of the way. And right. then once they're pregnant and there's a baby in their uterus with a heartbeat, we hand the baton right back to you.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing. It works very well.
Yeah, and we don't, you know, as you know, we don't deliver babies. I mean, I tell people all the time, we deliver pizza, but we don't deliver babies. So, you know, you call us up when you're in labor and we'll bring a pepperoni right over. But anyway, I can't thank you enough for joining us today. It's really been a pleasure to have you. I want to ask you one more question. What is the most challenging, if you had to think about the most challenging aspect of fertility patients or fertility treatment, what's the most challenging thing to you?
I think from a medical point of view, it is probably the patient who is completely anovulatory, just trying to get them to ovulate. And after all the testing and all the treatment that we've done, sometimes we just cannot get them to ovulate. I think from my practice perspective, it's difficult to see the patient who for financial considerations doesn't have the financial wherewithal to continue fertility therapy, and that's just the ugly truth. Unfortunately, it's not everybody can afford it.
Yeah, we know that 40% of people drop out really because of financial issues and financial reasons, and that's interestingly not the most common reason. And if you look at studies from Europe where it's paid for, mm-hmm. you know, because of all the socialized right. aspects of their societies, 60% of patients who drop out in Europe drop out because of emotional aspects or because they don't think that it's going to work. It's not because of financial reasons, because it's paid for there.
Yeah.
But yet we fight this never-ending battle with the Uniteds and the Blues and the, you know, Aetnas and the Cignas and everybody else in the world here who don't think fertility is or infertility is a disease. They think it's some elective condition. And we tell our patients all the time that it's similar to other diseases with one glaring difference, and that is that infertility is curable.
Right.
You know, we can't cure diabetes. We can't cure high blood pressure. We can't cure heart disease. We can't cure the common cold. But we can cure infertility. And we know that 85 to 88% of the people who walk in the door and stick with the plan walk out with a baby.
Right. Haven't some states mandated that insurance companies cover fertility treatment?
Yeah, some states have. I mean, mm-hmm. there's 14 or so states now, Massachusetts, Illinois, Hawaii, Indiana. I mean, there's lots of states that have mandated it. And patients come in and they say, well, Texas has a mandate too. And Texas does have a mandate. But our mandate is a mandate to offer, not a mandate to cover. And the difference, you think there's those, you know, few little words there that are different or few little letters that are different, but it makes a huge difference because what that means is that in Texas, insurance companies that offer health insurance are obligated to offer the employer who buys the insurance the opportunity to purchase a rider to cover infertility.
I see.
If they refuse to, then they're not covered. And then so many insurance companies or so many companies, rather, as you know, form health insurance plans under the ERISA statutes, which were never intended for this purpose, but they've been kind of hijacked, and now they're used to develop health insurance plans that exempt them from Texas state law.
Right. Yeah, it's frustrating.
So it's very frustrating. It's frustrating, unfortunately, for our patients. Well, I just want to go over again just for a minute a couple of things that we have coming up because we've got so much stuff going on in the next couple of weeks, even before the holidays. We've got our IVF orientation is on the 8th. That's going to be this Wednesday with Dr. Berger at North Austin Medical Center. That's at 6:30. So if you would please call an RSVP, 451-0149, so we can know how much food to get. And we'd love to have you there. We have our Maybe Baby Seminar that Dr. Mehta is going to be doing at Round Rock on the 15th. And we have our peer support group also on the 15th with Kelly Long and with Jamie Leonard. And then next week, Dr. Mehta is going to join me on the show, and we're going to have a special guest as well. So once again, Dr. Kaylin Silverberg from the Texas Fertility Center, our website, www.txfertility.com. Our office phone number is 451-0149. Rob, I can't thank you enough. Dr. Rob Cowan, I can't thank you enough for joining me today.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed it.
It's been an absolute pleasure. And so we hope everybody has a terrific week and come back and listen to us next weekend on Beyond the Birds and Bees. Thank you so much.
Talk 1370, the right choice for weekends.